Welcome to Pipeline Meeting, where marketers come to talk about sales. Whether you're the head of marketing or a founder who's supporting your first sales hire, we'll talk about qualifying your inbound leads and finding new ones with cold outreach. Learn more at introcrm.com/podcast.
I'm excited to have Sam on today. We're going to talk about inbound lead qualification and really the art and science of knowing who is a good or not a good lead. And he had a really good story that I think counterintuitive. People might be surprised by how it went based on how that lead started. So we'll jump into all that in a second. But Sam, if you just want to introduce yourself, great to have you on the show.
I'm Sam Keenly. I'm one of the VPs of Demand Gen over at Refined Labs. We work with B2B software companies, have been in the B2B space for a while. So I've seen a lot of anything and everything that can come about in this business. When you reached out to have this conversation, it's definitely a topic that's near and dear to my heart. So glad that we'll be jumping into it.
Let's just go right to this story because I thought it was so good. Basically, this is a post that Sam did on LinkedIn. Long story short, they've got a client who's generating leads and they had a lead come in that fit their ICP, which is ideal customer profile. In other words, the company was exactly a good fit, but the person who reached out, their job title was intern. And so the client was thinking that they should disqualify this lead because the person wasn't senior enough. It wasn't the right buyer within the organization. Sam discussed with them and they decided to do a discovery call with this intern anyway. And the next call is with the CEO, who is actually who you'd want the buyer to be. What happened there? How do you go from a call with an intern to a call with the CEO? And what do you think the common mistake is that people make, maybe being aggressive and trying to like filter out leads?
Yeah, unless you're targeting really small companies, like less than 10 people, where the decision maker is also the day-to-day end user or someone that's working in the business, they're going to be delegating that to other members of their team, which they should be if they're an effective leader. When instances like this happen, we've been trained for so long to think that buyers are the people that sign the contract. So you're like, hey, our buyer's the CFO or the VP of finance, so we're only going to target the CFO or the VP of finance. But in reality, they're just the one that's signing the contract at the end of the day. And what you need to think about is who are the people that are the end users of your product, the people that are feeling the pain that you're solving for or your service. And these are the people that are usually either being tasked with the research proactively or reactively. So proactively, sometimes they want to excel in their career, take on additional responsibility. I have a pain. If I can surface a solution to it, I'm going to take it to leadership and they'll either say, run with it, you know, go get a demo, bring us back information, or CEO gets called down from the board, you need to solve this ASAP, go find the solution to it. CEO tasks someone else lower down and they do it. Long story short, it's very rarely the CEO or this C-suite, you know, director level title that's coming inbound. If it is, that's great. That's a cherry on top. But more often than not, in today's day and age with how purchase decisions are being made, especially by committees, it's not going to be that target persona who you think. It's going to be in the initial calls or doing that initial research. And I think that's where the biggest gap is today with you have to think beyond that title and start going after those who are experiencing the pain the most.
I think you're really saying to put some chips in because to take a discovery call, that's 30 minutes. You've got 10 minutes of prep before, 10 minutes of follow-up after, maybe do some stuff in the CRM. That's around an hour of work plus. And if you're an account executive who's closing big deals, it's a pretty big time commitment. I do think the context here is, of course, that the company was a good fit. And I think this other point is understanding that the person who's reaching out is close to the problem. And so understanding the job titles of the end users around your product, the people who sort of interact with it around the product within the company. What's the process that you recommend people go through when they're thinking about that?
So there's a couple steps that we take, and my mind is notorious for going on rabbit hole and forgetting the second thing. So remind me that there is a second thing, and it's in the CRM. The first one is when we start with a client, one of the initial things that we ask for and have them populate is the ICP questionnaire. We're asking them tons of questions about who is their ideal customer, where are they located at. But within there, what we do is we nest it into two categories. Who are the job titles of the decision makers that you are often targeting? These are typically going to be the C-suite, the VPs, all of that. And then we ask, who are the influencers or the day-to-day users? That's forcing them to go down because while, say, they're selling an email marketing tool, the decision maker might be the CMO, but I can promise you the CMO is not the one that's executing those emails going out to all of their different prospects, clients, things like that. So that's where it might be the email marketing manager, just a regular demand gen marketer, someone like that. That helps us to triangulate not only who's signing it, but also who are the people who are experiencing the pains. So that's the first part. once we have them fill out that questionnaire, as time goes on, what we also do is we start to run an analysis for them using their own CRM data, their marketing automation platform. And what we'll do is we'll go find trends, typical win-loss analysis. On a win analysis, we're going and seeing who are all of the people that were a part of this committee, who are the campaign members or the opportunity memberships that are associated to the opportunity, and seeing if there's anything that was missed. Sometimes there's one off that it's like, hey, that's probably not going to be too common, but more often than not, there are a couple titles that we'll pull out of there and we'll say, hey, have you thought about this person? We're seeing them pop up a lot. And fortunately, this is a downside of a lot of times organizations build their ICP or their personas and they don't come back to them for years. Mm. That's another way where we're going in there proactively saying, like, what about title 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Should we be adding these? And more often than not, it's yeah.
I do want to talk about the tech stack a little bit there on your second point. I feel like you have to be a certain size. The company, your business has to be big enough where you have deals coming through, right? If you have like less than 10 customers or whatever, you're probably still discovering, right? It sounds like you need some level of critical mass before this type of analysis is going to work for you. Is that generally true? So if I'm like a one person bootstrapper and I have a few customers, this process is maybe too heavy, right?
With the tools and everything, yeah. So yeah. A lot of our clients are going to be, you know, series A, B, C, D. So they do at least have some type of infrastructure in place. But
yeah.
If you're a bootstrapper, I mean, I don't know if everyone's as analytical or detail-oriented as I may be, but I'm keeping a spreadsheet of, like, who am I talking to at this organization? I'm just power washing houses. Like, who's the owner of the house?
You get some level of repeatability, and then as you get that repeatability, you're going to be missing stuff. So what types of CRMs do you see customers typically using? What do you have default ones that you support? Is there some that are better or worse for this type of approach?
Yeah, the most common ones we see are not going to surprise you. Salesforce, HubSpot. I mean, that's just what a lot of B2B software companies are using nowadays. We have seen a couple other ones here and there, Pipedrive, a number of BI tools. So your normal Tableau, Yellowfin, those ones. Mm-hmm. We typically like to be as close to the source as possible where sales, SDRs, marketing is entering that information. So that's why we like using the CRM itself instead of it being passed through some type of data warehouse.
Okay, that makes sense. In this story, the job title was intern, but they're really reporting to the CEO. So you're relying on systems and data, but it does sound like there's a level of human input required too here, right? If I had like a totally automated inbound lead routing and prioritization, that lead, just like as a rep, I never even would have seen it because there could have been some rule or some intervention hard-coded in being like, if the job title is X or if they select their seniority level and it's Y, then like just enroll them in the monthly newsletter or whatever and don't do a sequence, don't do a sales follow-up. How important is that level of human discretion, having like a set of eyes and a person to kind of make a judgment call? How important is that? Or is that really unusual? And is that not important from your perspective?
I think it comes down to a couple of things. Like how much volume are you just getting in general? If you're getting 1 to 2 a day, it's very easy to keep an eye on that, have a human check on it. If you're getting hundreds a day, you know, it's a different story. But the one caveat to these types of things is we're only doing this with forms where the prospect is explicitly saying, I want to talk to your sales team. I want to get a demo. So these are not people that are just saying, I want to download your ebook. I want to watch your webinar. It's, I want a demo of your product. If you're running automation on that, I mean, you might be doing yourself a disservice if you're running those types of rules. If you do automate, because if you're getting hundreds of demo requests your product every day, good for you. You've solved something that 99.9% of people have not, but for the rest of us, I would be very hesitant to put any automations in place that are just automatically going to rule people out because of things like their title.
They have strongly self-qualified. Hey, I'm so interested. I want someone to reach back out to me. I want to put something on the calendar, at least in theory. But that's a pretty high intent action. It sounds like you have maybe like multiple entry points and you would treat those different entry points differently.
Exactly. Yeah. With us, for example, we have our form hooked up to Slack. The whole company gets to see everyone who fills out those forms. Half the time it's like people, hey, I just want to see how your form works. But there's a lot of eyes on going onto that as well. So it doesn't always have to be just one person. If you're strapped for time, you can send it to groups.
Okay. That's interesting. You do have more advanced companies that do lead scoring and things like that. This person downloaded the ebook, subscribed to the whatever, added this, checked that, and all of a sudden their lead score gets up, 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 and all of a sudden, you know, they're whatever, 80-something. What do you think about that type of automation? Would you say this person's done enough things that it's like analogous to them selecting a demo, or would you say, no, it's not the same?
Yeah, I always say buyers are a lot smarter than we give them credit for. They know where that button is up top to get in touch with you. I promise you they'll hit that if they want to talk to you. If they're perusing through the website, they're doing research. So there's a balance between being too outbound pushy, waiting on them. In that instance, I think lead scoring is great for SDRs and other sales reps to use that as a prompt to start to develop the relationship. Not, hey, I saw you're on the website, want a demo, but hey, saw you're on the website looking about this. We've got a number of people who know a lot about it. What's your problem? How can I help? And approach it from, let's give you value first before we ask you to buy anything. That's probably the way that I would approach similar lead scoring type activities.
Yeah, that makes sense. Hey, did you find what you were looking for? You know, is there something else I can send you? Do you have any questions about integrations or whatever?
Exactly.
Let's go back to our story. We get the intern, the second call is with the CEO. What do you recommend we do with that old intern? Let's say you do the demo, it goes well, and now you've got a follow-up. And let's say you had a bad day and you forgot to really clearly define what the next steps are and you don't hear back from them and it's been like 2 weeks. Do you think you go back to the CEO? Do you loop the intern in or vice versa? Do you just now keep your eyes on the prize with the CEO? How do you keep that? Because when you know that it's a buyer who has the time, maybe it's a director level person or a VP, you know you can go back to them. But in this case, maybe it's a little murky. Does the intern still own the project or is it the CEO now the person who I want to lock into? What do you think about for that follow-up process?
Yeah, I do both. Me personally, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, people are people. If they're holding their title over you, do you want them as a customer or client in the long term? Probably not. So, I mean, whether it's an intern and CEO, I'm having the same exact conversation with them. You know, the results and the outcomes are going to be different because one cares about revenue for the company. One cares about how do I do my job better? Mm. But I'm still approaching them with how can I help you? You know, what do we want to do to make this partnership work? So I'd reach out to both. Whoever replies is the person that's more or less, I'll call project managing the potential purchase, but I'd go after both of them in the same thread.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think it's hard to know. And sometimes maybe the intern is the one that nudges the CEO. I mean, they're going to be much more likely to see the email, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Right. And they're much more likely to be like, hey, did you see that? Hey, do you want me to respond?
Right. Yeah.
I just thought it was such a good example and something that comes up all the time. And I think customers so quickly want to just cut the noise and only talk to the quote unquote best leads. I did have one rather, which is sort of big picture question that I wanted to ask you about looking at Refine Labs and how you define yourselves as a company. How would you define this phrase demand generation? Because I've heard it used in lots of different ways by lots of different people. I think Refine Labs is a thought leader. I'm curious how you would say, what is demand generation exactly?
That's a good question. To me, demand generation is, it's essentially playing the long game with it, where you're not asking for some type of purchase or action right off the bat, but it's understanding who are the people that would benefit from your product or service. How do you get in front of them? How do you generate future demand? That's the difference between demand and lead is, are we going after a lead right now? Or are we going after long-term demand? Mm-hmm. How do we insert ourselves so that when they do become ready to buy, we're top of mind? Usually it's through like case studies, blog posts. Again, how do you help me do my job better? How can I get better results? Coming it from the lens of make your prospects and customers the hero of the story versus your brand or company.
Some companies I think are in this business of category creation, where they're trying to do demand gen, but they also have this problem of like informing the customers that they have a problem in the first place when they may not know it, and then trying to help them understand that they need to solve that problem that they didn't know they had, and then trying to understand that the way to solve the problem that they didn't know they had was with this tool they didn't know existed. And so I do think that sometimes people take on these really big boil the ocean type problems without realizing it. When you talk about like generating demand for a product or a service or whatever, creating a category is a lot harder than potentially operating within a category.
Yeah, it's a balancing act. When you create a category, you end up owning it. Anyone that thinks of your category chatbot, you think of Drift. If you're in a category like marketing automation, your mind immediately goes to HubSpot. So well-defined category, but there's already market leaders there and you're not going to outspend them. Yes, you can say, I'm in marketing automation. You can show up in those pages on G2 and Capterra and all that, but it's a lot harder to unseat those incumbents.
Yeah, totally. I want to encourage people to check out Sam on LinkedIn and check out Refine Labs. I don't know, Sam, if there's anything else you want to talk about.
Yeah, we've got content coming out of our team left and right all over LinkedIn, podcasts. So it's not hard to find us if you just look up Refine Labs on LinkedIn or Spotify or podcasts, anything. Really just trying to help create the next wave of B2B marketers.
I can tell you that we have customers who send me your podcasts already. So you're doing something right. And thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Harris. It was a good one.
That's all for now. You can find show notes at introcrm.com/podcast. The theme music for Pipeline Meeting is by Neighborhood Vandal, and it's shared under a Creative Commons Attribution, or CC BY, license. If you learned something, consider sharing this show with a friend. Thanks.